Okay, so here we are starting a new session. This is session 4. How many sessions do we have in all? Let's see, 12? Is that right? I think so. We're looking, Kathleen says she's having some connection problems, but we'll do her best to be of help to us. At the moment, I'm not. So, we're starting session 4. We are moving to not only a new topic, but a different approach. You know, until now, we've gone through space and time. We started off with the what it means to do TSK inquiry. And then we went through space and time and knowledge, to give some sense of the overall direction that TSK is taking us. And then we went through them again to deepen that, you could say. And I think we've been able to discuss and uncover a lot of different really valuable and important things. I certainly have been finding it useful, and the feedback has been pretty good. Now we're going to do it differently. We're going to start focusing on one particular aspect of the space facet or dimension of the vision, and that is this notion of space as a field. And it's probably a good idea to remind people at the outset that it's not as though TSK is saying space is a field. You know, what you need to understand is that space is a field, and then everything will clear up for you. The idea here, and always in TSK, is that if we entertain that possibility, if we allow for the possibility that you could understand space as, let's just say for now, intimately connected with the field of everything that arises, then that would change your relationship to space and ultimately change your relationship to your whole way of being. Because instead of engaging the world in terms of the limited, ordinary space that we're used to, we would now be engaging a world in which space was active in and related to a field in which everything that shows up is also related to that field. And now it becomes accessible, space becomes accessible in a different way. So that's what we're going to be looking at. We're going to spend the whole of this session, the next 6 weeks, looking at space as a field. And that means that for the most part, we're going to look at knowledge of time and space, because that's the book in which this notion of space as a field is most fully explored. And again, that's a good reminder that, you know, in other books and in other parts of the TSK writings, Rinpoche will talk about space and not talk about it as a field. He'll talk about it as, in different ways. But right now we're focusing on space as a field and see where that takes us. So mostly we'll be working with knowledge of time and space, although we'll also work almost as much with the first TSK book. And that's the reading for this week, is almost the very beginning of the first TSK book and then a little bit later in the section on space. That's what we're going to be looking at today. It's good to point out, I think, and I will be pointing out as we discuss, that TSK, the first book, doesn't really talk about fields very much. But it says some things that are related to understanding space as a field. So I'm going to call attention to those. I actually, for those of you who are writing assignments, this is the assignment for the week, and I will put it in the orientation also, is to look up the places in the first TSK book where the word field is used, and just write on what those present. If you have the the CD that contains the searchable text of all the books, then you can do that very easily. Just look for the word field. But if you don't, I will include in the orientation the places. And when I say all the places in the book, that's actually not what I meant to say. All the places in the space section where the word field gets used. And there are a couple of places where it's used, but not really in a space sense, because it's a word that we use kind of casually. Anyway, I will give you the page references that I'd like you to look at and write on. And the rest of you, are, you know, whether you want to write on it or not, you might find it interesting to do that, because it's always really, for me, very interesting to see how a new aspect of the vision unfolds in another book, which is what happens in the case of a field that just gets introduced. And we hadn't been thinking in those terms, but it turns out to be very helpful. And actually for me, and I suppose this is the reason that this comes up at this point in the study program in When It Rains, for me, working with space as a field is a very fruitful way of investigating. So we'll take our time and look at that together. So we start with the TSK reading, and starting on page 6, and the first thing to notice is that Rinpoche says, you know, we have this ordinary understanding of space, which is pretty much what makes room for objects and activities. That's a kind of a common sense understanding, you could say. And he says, well, that doesn't work. He says it's somewhat inaccurate, right? Because the idea that space is what makes room for normally we'd say, in TSK talk, we like to talk about space allowing. But Rinpoche says, well, wait a minute, is that really right? Because space doesn't do anything, at least that's our usual understanding. Now later he will talk about it more when he talks about, he kind of points towards or gestures toward the view in modern physics that space itself is an active and structuring medium. And so then this ordinary understanding that space doesn't do anything would give way. But he starts with that simple definition, and then he rejects it. There's a question here from David about the assignment, which is, should we just copy those sections or write about our experiences with them? Actually, what I had in mind was neither. Not more than copy them. Just look at them and see, do they seem consistent? Or do they seem to add something? That's what you would write about to our discussion of space as a field. And actually, next week we will read the first chapters of KTS that talk about space as a field. And so, really, I suppose the assignment is, this helps clarify it. Thank you. Is what's said in Knowledge of Time and Space? How does that relate to the very casual references to the idea of a field in the first TSK book? So write something. But as always, these assignments are meant to be very short. A couple of paragraphs, something like that. Maybe a little more, if you like. Okay, so we have this beginning definition, and it makes sense that it's not meant to take us very far, because we're at the very beginning of the very first book. And he just says, well, okay, we can start thinking about space this way. Turns out it's not that useful. And we've already seen enough, because we've been working with space for quite a while now, to know that that's not going to be a very accurate definition. But even if we wonder, Rinpoche says, no, that's just not quite right. One of the things that we've looked at that is not discussed here, it won't come up until later in this book, is that our usual understanding of space is as something physical. But there's more going on. Space is not just physical space. Physical space is a kind of example of space. So we can keep that in mind. The other thing that he says right here at the beginning that I think is interesting and is one of the places where we start to think about fields, even though he doesn't use the word. He says, this is about six lines into the reading. He says, first of all, he said physical space doesn't do anything, fine. And then he says there's also an issue with thinking of space as what makes room for objects and activities, because perceived space and its contents are interrelated and co-defining, so that the visible space of the situation is not more basic than the objects. Now, that's really interesting for a variety of reasons. One is that later on he's going to suggest that space is in some sense more fundamental, but we'll talk about that later when we get to those pages. Here he's saying it's not more fundamental, and in saying that he really brings up the heart of what is involved in the insight, or you might say the variation, where we consider space to be a field. He's saying space and the objects that show up in space arise together. They're interrelated. They're co-defining. So the field is not, you know, can only artificially be separated from what shows up in the field, or space can only artificially be separated from what shows up in space. So an obvious example of that is, I think we talked about this recently, is a dream, right? If you think of a dream as having its own space, there's a dream, you know, in the dream something is happening. Whenever you see that word in, it's kind of a space word. So whenever you see, you know, in my dream I was on a desert island. So that's the space of the dream. And the things that show up in the dream are all related to that space. The things in your ordinary world are not related to that space. And if they do get translated, and what I mean by that is, for instance, if you if there's a sound in the world around you, you're lying in bed asleep, but there's a sound of probably not the alarm clock, but some other sound, you might notice it and incorporate it into the dream, but in incorporating it, you will translate it into the space, the world of the dream. You'll give it a different identity. So that's an example of how space as a field and the contents of what shows up in that field are interrelated. Now, in this particular section, and we're still just in the first paragraph here, Rinpoche describes that in terms of visible space or perceived space. He doesn't say, you know, that's a category that he introduces here, which is different from, I guess maybe you could say, the space of existence. And I don't think that's a category he works with a lot in the vision, so I don't want to really say any more about it, but it's just that he's limiting the observation that space is interrelated to what shows up in space to the specific case of perceived space. Another way in which he gestures in this opening section beyond our ordinary understanding of space, and something we've looked at in the past, is down at the bottom of the page, about four lines up, he says, the seeing of the objects in the space itself occurs in a kind of space. So here, space is already being presented as something mental, you could say. When we see something, the seeing itself happens in space. Now, our usual word for the space in which our mental activity, such as seeing something, shows up, our usual word for that is consciousness, right? So he's suggesting here, and this won't come up until quite a bit later, but he's really already foreshadowing some of the really important themes in the TSK treatment of space. He's suggesting here that our consciousness could be understood as a kind of space. And that we can leave that open. I'm pulling that out of what's said here, but he doesn't make a big point of it. He doesn't make a point of it at all. He just says that's the way it is. But if we're reading carefully and lesson number one in TSK when you're working with the books is to read carefully. Or maybe it's better to say read with appreciation, and then you will naturally read carefully. So that point is already being suggested here. So he goes on now to say that space is infinite. He says that just straight out. Space, this is on the bottom of the first paragraph on page 7. Space, unlike objects, remains infinite in a way that is untrackable and ungraspable. So space is vaster than whatever shows up in space. And if we think in terms of the physical universe, the model that we have of it, we don't have any direct experience, you could say, of space in the cosmic sense. But the model that we have is that space is more vast than whatever shows up in it. The question of whether space has limits, I think generally people would say it doesn't, but on the other hand, well, let's not go into that. It's just there's so much to talk about. We don't really have to talk about that. So he does say that whatever you look at it, you always find more space. He says space encompasses everything. It always leads us beyond. And then he makes the point, and this is in a way a fundamental point for why do you bother to explore space and time and knowledge? Because our ordinary way of understanding them is too limited. And our ordinary way of understanding space is that we ignore it. We just treat it as though it didn't exist, except insofar as it creates a distance between the things that we care about. As he says, space is infinite, space transcends anything else, but we don't pay any attention to that at all. Instead, intellectual energy busies itself trying to keep up with the infinite wealth of information to be had about objects. Now it occurs to me, I hadn't really thought about this till just now, he says that space is infinite, it's always greater than the objects in it, but then he also says that the information available about objects is infinite. And I suppose there he's pointing toward the knowledge dimension, but knowledge that's been narrowed down into this gathering of information about specific objects. It's infinite, but infinite in a very narrow sense compared to this transcendent infinity of space. So if we could contact that infinity, that would be liberating. And he talks a little about what the context of that would be. He says at this point that if we could contact that, we would, we might discover a kind of relaxation. He says, by contemplating, this is about 12 lines down on page 7, by contemplating this space, we may be able to open up and experience a level of relaxation and satisfaction, which we are usually unable to touch through our preoccupation with things. Was that a question? I guess not. Okay. So something is being pointed at, which is the infinity of space, the transcendence of space beyond all the content of space. And the other thing that's being pointed to is that if we could contact that, then at the very least we could say, there would be more relaxation and satisfaction available to us. He does also warn us right here that if we just try to jump into understanding space, our usual way of thinking absolutely focuses on things and content. And just going right to space would be confusing. And he says maybe even forbidding is the word that he uses. I mean, people might be afraid of it. And I've had people say that sometimes. I don't know if any of you have that experience. That if you go with space, if you let yourself kind of engage space, it's as though you're letting go of something that you care about, and it's frightening. I've never noticed anybody get really afraid, but that sense may come up. And you know, maybe the reason I haven't noticed it is because people, if they go there and they're afraid, then they just stop. And I have had that happen. I have had people tell me that some aspect of the vision, they'd start to work with it, they would go in this direction that just seemed frightening, and they stopped. They put it aside. So it's worth keeping in mind that that could happen. I hope it's not happening for any of you, but if it is, let us know. Okay, so I said before that Rinpoche says that space is not more basic than what shows up, that the two are interdependent and correlated. But he also says, really, at this point, that there is a sense in which space is more fundamental. And he starts talking about that on page 8. My plan, as you can see, for today is just to work our way through. I guess that's usually my plan. On page 8, he says, let's see. He starts to raise the question whether space isn't the most basic thing. At the end of the first full paragraph, he says, can space itself be the fundamental nature of existence that we seek elsewhere or simply ignore? Now, he raises this possibility, and he's going to kind of engage that more fully, and we will actually practice with it in a minute. Michael's asking a question, and I hope this is not a mistake on my part. He's saying the assigned reading from TSK was pages 40 to 42, and so why in the world am I talking about these early pages? My intention, or at least the way I had it ready for myself, was that this was part of the assigned reading. If it's not, I apologize. That's what I'm talking about, and I'm going to continue to talk about it. And if it's just a mistake on my part. Can somebody tell me, was the reading from KTS and then those two pages from 40 to 42? Is that what it says? Okay, well, my mistake. So go back and read these pages. I apologize. We'll talk a little bit at the end about 40 to 42, but as you can tell, I was thinking that this was a part of the assignment. So here we are. We're talking about whether space is more basic. Let me kind of process the fact that you haven't read these pages, and maybe I'll change what I'm going to be doing a little bit, but we're already pretty far into it. So, and at the very least, Rinpoche says that space is ultimate. This is about, well, I'm not going to bother to give references since you haven't looked at it, but on page 8 he says, we usually feel that space is ultimate in the sense that it exists even if there are no objects. And on the other hand, objects depend on space. So let's get clear again on the reading for that I thought we were doing, pages 6 to 14. So I'm on page 8 at this point. So he's saying space seems to be more basic in the sense that you can't have objects without space, but you can have space without objects. Now, I think in terms of cosmology, it's generally said that space shows up in this Big Bang, and objects are... you know, then evolve out of that, but they're already kind of inherent in the first moment. So in that sense, they're connected to space. But, you know, I think a simple example of what's being talked about here is if you take if you try to create a vacuum, you know, you have a certain area that's circumscribed and try to pump everything out of it so you've gotten rid of all the objects, but you still have space. You can't get rid of space. So in that sense, space is more basic, and that's part of what Rinpoche is saying. And I think really what he's pointing towards is that there is that space is a space as more basic is not the kind of space that we think about when we talk about space as nothing at all. Instead, and this is at the top of page 9, and it does occur to me that we read this section some weeks ago, so at least you're somewhat familiar with it. So at the top of page 9, he says, it may be that our familiar reality is an expression of a more unified reality, which has now unfolded in dualistic ways, and in particular, there's this distinction between something and nothing. And so space is nothing. Space is the nothing at all within which some things appear. And that distinction, in that way of thinking about it, you could say space is not more fundamental. But that space as nothing at all, he's saying there seems to be a more unified reality, and there's a sense in which that kind of space is that's related to this more unified reality is fundamental. So he raises that possibility. He's not insisting on it here, but he says it's kind of an interesting phrase on page 9. He says the relaxing character of space, that's what he talked about before. Space has a kind of a pleasing, relaxing, soothing quality. When you feel there's a kind of spacious feeling, you all know that, there's a kind of a relaxing quality. He says that relaxing quality contrasts in an interesting way with the tendency of objects to lure us into endless closed-minded engagements. So our ordinary way of engaging the world, especially when we reach out to connect with things, to take hold of them or push them away or make use of them or try to figure them out, all of that has a kind of a closed quality to it. Everything has already been specified. And he contrasts the openness of space. And then he relates that back, I think, to the underlying this sense of an underlying unified reality. And again, you could link that to the idea of the field. But he relates that back to that. And he says, we don't have to think of that as real, or at least that's assumed in what he says. But we also shouldn't think of it as just kind of a nice image or metaphor. He says, when used in a certain way, these considerations need not be merely poetic daydreams. They can be pleasing and accurate symbols of a reality that cannot be shut out, no matter how much it may conform to, in appearance to conventional customs. So conventional customs, our customary view of space, is much more related to the sense of nothing at all. There are the somethings, and then there's the nothing, which is space. And we're talking now about the physical realm. But he says maybe there's this more unified reality. This is not just a pleasing or a poetic daydream. It can be pleasing, he likes. but he says it can be a symbol of this reality, which really is more fundamental and is not shut out, even though we've learned to relate to space in terms of nothing at all. Now, the reason I've taken some time to set all this up is that he then goes into it in terms of this sentence, and I remember we talked about this a few weeks ago when we did read this section before. He talks about it in terms of this notion that comes up in the middle of page 10. You remember the capitalized sentence in the middle of the page. He says, space is projecting space into space. That's all. Right? He says, that's all that's so. But that is a symbolic representation. That is, it seems to me anyway, that he is not insisting on the reality of that. He's just saying, what about that possibility? And actually, as I read that this time, I was struck by the way that that the context in which he brings that up. He says, let's go ahead and read it because you may not remember so clearly. He says, we can leave logical analyses aside for the moment and continue to contemplate the comings and goings of things in our mind's eye. Okay, Michael is correcting me, or we did read this section in November, but we only read pages 3 to 10, but we read this part that we're talking about right now. We didn't read pages 10 to 14. Okay. So he's saying we can leave logical analyses aside and continue to contemplate the comings and goings of things in our mind's eye. It almost seems, and again, it's kind of hedging here, he's saying you could look at it this way, it almost seems that an object which is here has appeared from a past condition of empty space, needs that space to be here, and gives way to a future condition of, again, empty space. And then from that he concludes, it looks like, not saying it is, but it looks like space is projecting into space. That is all. Even what seems to fill up the space as a present tense existing object is also space. And then we have this line. Space is projecting space into space. And then he says, reflect on this picture of all existence and happening for a while. So the thing that struck me here is he invites us to leave logical analysis aside. So if you say space, all that's going on is that space is projecting space into space. You can't arrive at that through logic. And later on, in the very next paragraph, actually, after the break on that page, he says either that picture is either unacceptable or insignificantly true. And he says, don't worry about that. It's still an interesting perception. Even if it doesn't work in terms of our conventional truth. That's what I'd like us to work with a little bit. Take the at the beginning of this discussion, he says, forget about logical analysis, leave that aside. At the end, he says, don't expect that this way of thinking conforms to our usual understanding. Given that, it's still a pleasing way to think about it, right? Or it's an interesting perception. It's opening up a possibility. And then at the very top of page 11, having explored that a little bit, he says, there is a sense in which as a perception, so this vision of space projecting space into space, there's a sense in which as a perception, or better still, he says, as a vision. So we come to this word, which I've emphasized quite a bit, that we're trying to activate a vision of reality. But this is one of the few places, I think, where Rinpoche actually talks about vision, except in the title of the first book. So he says, there's a sense in which as a perception, or better, as a vision, ordinary space may be related to the primary ground of all existence. So this, we're activating a vision, that's the suggestion. So I'd like us to do this reflection. It says, if we just contemplate the comings and goings of things in our mind's eye, we see that there's a past condition of empty space, something shows up but needs space in order to show up, and then it disappears, and again, all that's left is empty space. That's the vision or the perception. What if we saw things in that way? What if we reflected on things in that way without worrying about whether that makes logical sense, and without worrying about whether it conforms to our usual understanding, because in fact we're specifically wanting to go beyond the usual understanding. So just a little reflection. So I'd like us to do that as an exercise now. Reflect on this vision. So you'll have to do it in your mind's eyes, he says. Things come. There's nothing, then things show up and need space, and then they disappear and you have space again. So however you find to do that, let's reflect on that for a few minutes, okay? Do it now. Okay, so let's come back together, and I invite you to reflect on that, that the experience that you just had. We're trying to give a kind of experiential content to a statement that is difficult. You know, we talked about this back in November, that this is it's hard for people to know what to make of this. But, you know, now that we're looking at it more closely, I think it's fair to say that then Rinpoche gives us some good clues. He says, don't worry about the logic of it. Don't worry about whether it fits. Just let that be your experience. Now, let's see. Somehow I just lost the little chat window. There it is. Okay. Good. So we have several comments. Let's see. So Sudhi, I think, stopped her comment right in the middle. Oh, there it is. Okay. That's okay. He says, so she's wondering, could we say it like this? That there is a basic space that all events take place in my mind, whether in a dream or imagination or ordinary reality. So that would go, I think, part way in the direction of what Rinpoche seems to be pointing at here. But, you know, it leaves open the question, so where is my mind in space? Or what is the relationship between my mind and space? I think that the moment you start to think about space in terms of spaces of the mind, and we already saw that Rinpoche brings that point up, that's helpful. And it moves in the direction of a field. That really is what we're looking at. I don't think when we talk about fields, we're necessarily talking about this primary ground of all existence. Not at all. But it's a move in that direction. So yes, I think it moves in that direction. Okay. Hayward says, it certainly seems so regarding appearances in mental or emotional space. Well, it's interesting. So you know, both of you are led to reflect on this in terms of the mental realm. I don't know that that's, I don't think actually that Rinpoche is pointing toward that here, but there's nothing wrong with looking at it that way. Let me give you an example that I thought of just in doing the exercise now, which was a bird very slowly flying across the sky, the question of moving through space. My sense is that's what Rinpoche has in mind here, but you could take it in the direction that both of you have. I think that's fine. It says, he's saying, Hayward says, if you want to see this in physical space, that seems to require a longer span of time and knowing. Maybe so. Although the bird flapping through space, I found that to be a fairly illuminating way of looking at it. It does seem as though in order to use that for physical space, you have to look at instances of things that change, right? It's very, Hayward, maybe that's what you're thinking of. If you think of a mountain, let's say, you know, first there was empty space, and then there's the mountain, and now there's empty space. That's geologic time we're talking about. So, okay. Michael quotes Bob Pasternak. A few of you know Bob, who's someone who's been a TSK student and has taught courses in TSK for many years. I'm sorry, that's not Bob Pasternak. It's Boris Pasternak. Excuse me. Boris Pasternak is an author who won the Nobel Prize a long time ago, passed away, I don't know, in the 60s or 70s. He quotes a Russian proverb, life is not as simple as crossing a field. Perhaps because we forget that we are in the field and everything that arises is like clouds sailing across an open blue sky. Yeah. I don't know. When the Pasternak quote, the kind of field that he has in mind, it seems like, you know, is an open field with flowers and grass and you just easily make your way across. I don't know how that relates to spaces and fields. And are the clouds overhead, is that like, you know, the opposite of a field that you can just easily traverse? I don't know. Ken says, the thing, I guess, that I reflected on was my jaw. To the side of the felt impression, a ghost image of jaw arose. The first impression vanished into space. The second gathered substantiality. how fleeting this substance. Well, that's very nice. So the substantiality that comes with space, if we focus on space, it takes on a different quality, and I think the fleeting quality and the shift that you describe is very much related to this possibility that Rinpoche invites us to reflect on. Things show up, they require space, and then they disappear. Klaus writes, if there is only space, there is no space for real obstacles anymore. Yeah, you know, Rinpoche writes here or talks here about space, being in touch with space can help us relax because we let go of our engagement with all of the obstacle, all of the objects that we're constantly encountering. And I think that what you're saying here, Klaus, is related to that. Space has nothing to do, in one way it has everything to do with objects. It's a symbol of the possible ground of all appearance, Rinpoche is saying. But in another way, it's like it doesn't care. So the image there is that always makes sense to me is when something shows up in a mirror or is reflected in a lake, let's say. You know, it's not affected by what goes by. And obstacles are no longer real in that sense. I think that's what you're pointing to. Sudi asks Michael asks Sudi, are we fielding fly balls in a field of dreams? So some of you may have seen that movie, Field of Dreams. It's kind of interesting to think about that in terms of the field that we're going to be exploring, have started to explore. So I'll just leave it at that. And then John says, the focus on space takes the self out of the center. This creates an experience of, what is this basis of space experientially? So yeah, the self out of the center, it's easy to see how that could arise. It's not something Rinpoche talks about here, but if there is just a kind of an arising of and passing away in space that requires space so that in a sense it always stays space, the self has nowhere to stand. It seems that the self has to take a position. And in space itself, there may be no positioning possible, no taking it, well, no firm or solid position possible. I don't quite understand the last thing you write here, John. This creates an experience of what is this basis of space? You mean what is the basis of space, or what is this space basis experientially? Okay, good. We'll leave it at that then. We're out of time, but since most of you, I guess, just read those pages on 42 to 44, let me see if there's something I have here that seems significant enough to say about that. I'm not sure there is. The notion on page 43 was brought up in When It Rains. It's this ongoing tendency toward consolidation. And I had another note somewhere, but let's look for a moment at the context of that particular phrase. Actually, I didn't mark it. I can't find it at the moment. Oh, here it is. Okay, a little bit, at least some of it. This relates actually to John's point at the top of 41, or at the bottom of 40, he says, the model, and here he's saying you've done some exercises, the giant body exercises and so on. He says the model that derives from those exercises sees the body as a tendency emerging from a kind of space, and it suggests that the body's solidity is mere appearance. More specifically, it posits that mental, emotional, and physical are different facets of a subtle ongoing patterning or tendency toward consolidation. And it's a tendency that is never fully finalized. So I think that's actually very helpful as a further comment on what we've just been looking at, you know, that when you see appearance as always depending on space, and always really, you could say, an expression of space, then whatever appears never departs from space, but it's always tending to consolidate. That's what he's saying here. It's always tending to turn towards something solid. And we fail to see that it never actually becomes solid. We fail to see that space is always available within it. I think that's what he's pointing towards. And the model that we're going to move toward now of the field, space as a field, and seeing where that leads us, is a way, you could say, I think, of recapturing or inviting anew the recognition that whatever appears is only a tendency toward something solid that never fully turns into something solid. Because I think you could say what's solid is leave space out. You know, space is nothing. And when you say something is solid, even though, of course, conceptually you'd say even the most solid thing is filled with space, atoms are mostly space, but the way that we relate to appearance is as a bunch of solid things in the middle of a lot of nothing. If we understand or appreciate or recognize that there's just this consolidating tendency, space remains available. That's where the field could lead us. So that's where we'll look next week. I apologize for the confusion about the reading. You may want to go back and read that section in light of the discussion that we had today, and maybe I'll make some more comments on that. So for next week, the reading is Knowledge of Time and Space. I'll go back and check the readings as they're posted on the website and make sure that they're accurate. Okay? Thank you very much.